There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Yeah, just like forehead and pointed ears are all visible at like the deliberating table, just like
Yeah, so you can't see their grinding teeth beneath the table.
Yeah,
Welcome back to the internet's number one fake history podcast, The Lore Boys. This is episode 3, Verdominaria United arc from Magic the Gathering. So check out the episode description for links to parts 1 and 2 if you haven't heard it. I am your host, Ethan Palmer. With me, as always, is James and Peter. James is the one, you can always tell James, by the one smashing things on his desk during the intro.
Oh, I was plugging in my headset. Sorry about that. I didn't mean to make a noise. But here I am, James, Lore Boys United, once again.
Oh, true.
And I'm the Rizzler. I just learned that word, Peter O'Donnell. Yeah.
That is Peter also true.
We've all been sticking out our gat for Peter the Rizzler.
I am the Rizzler.
I did always do stick out my gat for Rizzler thing. I think that's a thing that I did always do.
Like you're so skibbity, dude.
Where did Jamie learn so these skibbity words? Is it Instagram Reels? Is that how this happened?
Like, I'll never tell.
Which?
I believe Jamie's on TikTok.
I'm actually not.
I'm on
Reels, Shorts, and Twitch so far. I haven't made the full transition to Zoomer Media, but
okay, I see.
It's scary. It's a scary place.
We'll be our interpreter.
Everyone's yachting or something. I don't know. So where we left our magic story.
Where we left the Rizzler. I mean, Karn.
Yeah. So we've been following Karn in his kind of investigation of the Phyrexians on Dominaria. He got buried under a mountain, got rescued by Ajani. Him and Ajani met up with two other planeswalkers, Jaya, Ballard, and Teferi, and some sorcerers, one of whom turned out to be a Phyrexian in disguise.
Oh, yeah.
They investigated a tower. They got picked up on a by the Weatherlight, the skyship that patrols Dominaria with Dominaria's like resident Justice League of non-planeswalkers, but the ones who can't leave the plane. And after being picked up by them, they agreed, we're going to make a stand at the Mana Rig, this like ancient Thran structure built in the deserts of Shiv. And they said, okay, we're going to split up and find some allies before we do that. So we followed one of the three stories last episode, which was Jaya going off to find Ajani and the Benelish Knights of House Capassion, only to find an old wizard named Airtai and his pet Phyrexian Dreadnought. It's all ringing bells. I know it's been.
It
like
all
weeks,
is, but, and the last time I did not picture who would work on a mana rig. I'm just picturing ripped wizards trying to like put piping in.
Hey, who's the new guy? We got soft little hands.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my.
Yeah, just like soaked in whatever color wizard magic juice. they're fracking oil out of the ground. Right?
Yeah.
Just,
Their pointed hats are a little bit floppy from all the sweat in the midsection of the hat.
Yeah, well, you need like a pointed hard hat for safety. And, like,
with and the stars. It's like blue with the stars and moon on
of
it.
Course, yeah. And then your like work gloves would also be like kind of like silken, right?
Right, yeah.
You got to like check the schedule. It's just like a crystal ball.
Oh, yeah.
I follow. You know, everyone's going to the strip club after a long like 3 weeks on shift. Everybody, grab your brooms. We're heading over.
Yeah. Climbing in and out's got to be cut.
Give me a broom. You have way too many, bro. Give me your broom. You're way too drunk to fly, bro.
Would you just handle? Would you just like hand over like a bundle of like the sweeping like the bristles? Like as if that's yeah. like you have to put the bristles key. In the back of the broom as the ignition.
So Gian and Johnny go off to find knights to help in the fight.
It's a real Bug's Life scenario here. He's going to find circus freaks.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they were off dealing with those parasitical tendencies that they were grappling. We have our resident Archmage Joda, the Eternal, who's thousands of years old, who's heading to a place called an island called Yavimaya to recruit some Fey folk. So Yavimaya is a large island in a part of Dominaria known as Terrasier, covered in thick forest. At the end of an ancient ice age, the forest gained sentience and became a living thing. The elves who lived there, who were refugees from another place called Llanowar, which is actually the elves that were fighting with Ajani were the Llanowar elves. They had some refugees long, long ago who came to Yavimaya when the forest came to life. And then they were kind of just dealing with this like angry forest. They paired up with the quote canon gorillas of the forest to befriend it. And now they live in harmony with the living forest.
Like G-E-U or G-O-R?
No, G-O-R, like monkeys. Like
oh, okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Gorillas. Yeah.
But I like that if you leave like plants alone long enough, they can just become sentient. Like, make sure to weed your garden or else pulling your carrots later is going to be a whole thing.
Yeah. I didn't figure out what exactly triggered it. It just said at the end of an ancient ice age. So my assumption is like it was always sentient. It's just like when the ice receded, it thawed and, you know, was alive again. Like it was permafrosted or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So when the ice receded, then it's like, oh, we're out of the freezer and we're alive again. Nice. So they become known as the Yavimayan elves. And they're the ones that Joda is going to capture. So Yavimaya, this sentient forest, is controlled by like an avatar of sorts. These avatars are called Maro sorcerers, M-A-R-O sorcerer. I didn't look up the root of the word, but he is the living embodiment of this force of nature, which is the Yavimaya forest, and he's named Multani. So I sent you guys a picture of Multani if you're interested.
Maro, I got the etymology here. It is proto-Celtic, so it's like old European, which is dead or to die. So I think that might just be a cool word they pulled, or nice. The first result on the etymology is unrelated.
Yeah.
Dead, Welsh mar or marb, which is also, yeah, to die.
There you go. So Joda has come to Yavimaya to find the leader of the elves, this elven woman named Maria, or Maria, and negotiate for the aid of the elves in the fight against the Phyrexians. Doesn't take long for him to run into Maria in the story. She's literally the first elf he finds. She's pretty adamant that they're not going to leave the forest to help fight at the Manarig. She's like, they talk for a little bit. She takes him to her town, which is this Yavimayan village built on these Thran runes called the runes of Krug. And she's like, no, we're not going to leave it. It doesn't make any sense. And honestly, they have pretty good reason not to. So this is the second invasion of Dominaria by the Phyrexians, right? During the first invasion, with Multani's leadership, Yavimaya had been relatively untouched throughout pretty much the whole invasion. The Yavimayan forest was pretty resilient to the whole thing. The Maro sorcerer is extremely powerful. He had donated like a seed that grew into the wood for the Weatherlight's hull, like magic wood, essentially. He like lived sentiently inside the Weatherlight's hull for like a little bit, the wood of the Weatherlight's hull for a little bit too.
That's like Queen Victoria within the Resolute Desk in the White House. She lived.
Exactly. She's entombed in there, her spirit.
Imagine what it'd feel like to be a ship. It'd be so like stretchy and creaky, I feel like.
I feel like if you got a good pose, like arms out back, just kind of resting in the water, it could be kind of nice.
Okay, you have to think where your head, face and your arms.
Well,
are.
Well, I was thinking my face would be where the figurehead already is, right? And then on my way back. Yeah.
All right. Okay. I think I'd rather be a boat than a desk.
I think I make my face where the rudder is. So then to steer, I could just like spit water to the left or the right. You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Remember that time in Titanic when the guy falls off the back and bounces off Ethan's lips?
Yeah. I bit him in half. So Multani had almost single-handedly turned the tides of war during the first invasion when he uprooted several miles of the unscathed Yavi Maya to turn the trees into warriors in defense of the plain. And he sent them to Urborg, the where the final battle of the against Yawgmoth of the first Phyrexian invasion took place.
Okay, cool.
Essentially. So he's a powerful guy capable of turning trees into fighters.
Can you complicate a plant? Is that the advantage?
I'm not entirely sure if there's any complicated, like, it is organic material, but it's usually flesh, not like plant matter. So I don't know. It's an interesting question.
Yeah.
You wouldn't complicate a leather purse.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You wouldn't complicate a car.
Yeah. Compilation is a crime.
Yeah. Complicating video games is a crime. Complicating video games is a skateboard. Multani has a sort of counterpart. This is just a fun little aside about Multani. I was having fun researching him, but he has a sort of counterpart from the land of Urborg, the black mana part of Dominaria, called Yargle. Yargle is often described as a gluttonous frog spirit that haunts the realms. And I did send you guys a picture of Yargle because he is. I think Pete, you will very much enjoy his design because he's
holy fuck.
Speaking of ships biting people in half.
Yeah, I mean, he's much more angry than I imagined, frog-wise.
Yeah. If you guys hear another bump, it's because Jamie has the plug in his mouth.
Well, yeah. I didn't expect all this back and forth. Oh, man. Look at that guy. He is a frog. He's the glorious...
The mantis pointer. Limbs at the bottom are not quite as frog-like as I imagined. This elven wizard, though, is, as far as a guy who speaks for the trees... As far as a Lorax goes for our story, absolutely made a bark.
Yeah, not a lizard. Or not a lizard. Not a lizard. Also not an elf. He's
not a lizard.
he's just like a spirit. And the Maro is... I did look it up while you were looking. When I said I didn't look up the etymology, I meant like the in-universe etymology, which is just like Dominarian forces of nature are sometimes called Maro. Some of them are servants of the world soul, Gaia.
Very good. Okay.
So yeah, he is just like a spirit. Essentially that, and like the body that you see with the wood is like he has just fashioned himself a body out of wood, essentially.
Oh,
so he
changes his
form. That's why when I say like he lived as the ship, he can just like become the wood of the hull of the Weatherlight.
If you want to become a little wood, baby, the
me when I when yeah when
me me when you are the episode
you are when you're around.
You want to see my gluttonous frog spirit? So much later in the timeline than what we're going to talk about today, again, this is just a fun little aside. We get an excerpt from Emily Tang's The Legendary Team-Ups of March of the Machine. And this comes from a card called simply Yargle and Multani. There were these kind of like team-up cards, which were like two people essentially like working together and they became one creature as a card. So here's an excerpt from Emily Tang's writing. When the demonic frog spirit Yargle first noticed the Phyrexians charging toward him, he was elated. So much food, also eager to be eaten. What he didn't realize was that the more he ate, the more he exposed himself to the dangerously virulent glistening oil. Someone else noticed, though. Muldrotha, an Urborg elemental who was the daughter of the Marrow sorcerer Multani. Seeing the danger that Yargle was in, she sent a plea for assistance to her father. Muldrotha managed to persuade him, and Multani bound himself to Yargle, using his powers and existing knowledge of Phyrexia to grant increased resistance to glistening oil. Though Multani had been initially reluctant to help, he found himself impressed by the insatiable nature of Yargle's appetite and found himself with a new appreciation for Urborg's strange ways. So the art is literally just like the giant frog wrapped in wood with like a stern grandfatherly wood face on the shoulder.
So funny. It looks like the Halloween episode of The Simpsons where Mr. Burns' head is put on Homer's body. But it's like it's a big frog, and and then like an ant face on the side there. It's just fantastic.
It's so good. I love it so much because it's like it's so silly, but the art is still amazing, right? Like it's still magic art, and like so well done and so detailed and everything.
Yeah, he's
but...
also like tearing an R like some kind of limb off of a giant metal snake too.
Yeah,
like
you see the dreadnought. That's a Phyrexian dreadnought in the background.
Oh,
of that
right,
art,
yeah,
is
yeah,
what
yeah.
I assume. Yeah, it's this giant like. Like Jormungandr from God of War, big.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we'll back to the past now, to where we actually go. That was just a little aside about Multani and Yargle. But back in the past, Jota pleads with Meria, warning her of sleeper agents and the Phyrexian corruption. He's like you're not going to be safe in Yavimaya. They got sleeper cells. They've got they might already be among you. You don't
any
know.
Of these plants could be a Phyrexian. Even him, and just like grabs a branch, like snaps it off.
No, I'm not. That flower just saying no, I'm not.
Yeah, that flower is actually a plant from a different government. Yeah, I'm not a lizard.
None of us are lizards. So she's unmoved. She's confident that Multani can sort the good from the bad whenever they return to the earth. She's like, if we have sleeper cells among us and we all die, Multani will sort us out, basically.
Right.
So she gives them a firm but fair Nabra when they hear a noise from behind them. So this is from this is an excerpt from Langley Hyde's A Brutal Blow, the fourth story in the five-part Dominaria United story. Birds arrowed through the sky overhead, screaming. She watched them, a frown marring her forehead between her brows. Hoots boomed through the forest as monkeys shouted the alarm, and Jota even heard the coughing roar of some great forest cat. Meria turned to face him. Something is coming. She spun and ran out from the building. Jota fell into pace beside her. In the distance, tree branches rocked, then shattered, exploding upward in a burst of greenery as a dragon engine reared into Yavimaya's vacant blue skies. Jota had never seen a mechanism so vast. Its bronze skull glistened in the hot tropical light, blotting out the sun. Its razor-edged back sloped away into the rainforest, longer than the ridge of a hill, and it waded through the trees toward Jota, Meria, and the elves. The dragon engine's serrated mouth gaped open in a voiceless roar. Its thrum was so deep, Jota couldn't hear it. He could only feel it, like a blow to his heart. The vibrations traveled through the landscape, shattering branches. Parrots dropped from the trees, stunned. Small marsupials fell, eyes and noses bleeding. Jota touched his face, pressing his index finger to the hot trickle that tickled his lips. He, too, bled. Yavimaya elves emerged from their building, scrambling to arm themselves. Ryder led their Kavu from the treetop stables. One male elf stumbled from his cottage, holding an infant bleeding from its neck. He stared at Meria with beseeching eyes. So dragon engines that I referenced there are dragon-like metallic creatures which lived in the first sphere of the OG Phyrexia. They're Phyrexian dragons, essentially. They're called dragon engines because they're machines. Cool. But they're just dragon engines, basically. Or they're just Phyrexian dragons. They're obviously just dragon engines, but
the dragon. Yeah, obviously the physics of this doesn't work because of the sound being like slower than light. I would love to think that there's like just like a regular elven farmer or something, and just like whatever, working, plowing his fields, and then it's just like one parrot drops. He's like, that's odd. And then like two, and then three, and then it's like, and he's like, oh, oh, and then you hear the roar come through the woods. But like the sign was the parrots. Like the animals always know, right? Like just like a bunch of parrots and monkeys dropping from all these palm trees.
Parrots are so good at speaking because they hear faster than humans.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm still stuck on the trickle that tickled his lips. Wow, that's fun.
That made me stumble. I'm sick, yeah. And reading that quote was not as easy as I made it seem, folks.
I mean, you're stuck. No, you got a little trickle on your lips, eh?
Yeah,
I got a little lip trickle.
He's got a little warm tickle that trickled down his nickels. I don't know. Rizzle.
Originally the dragon engines were created by the unknown planeswalker who had originally created the plane of Phyrexia, then corrupted by Yawgmoth whenever he found it.
I see. Okay.
So they're OG to the first invasion as well, dragon engines.
I'll just look it up. Like, are they like dragons made of Phyrexian metal, or because in my head they're either like a siege weapon, like a cannon on wheels for some reason,
they're
animal?
They're dragons.
Okay.
They're dragons, just made out of metal.
Metal dragons.
I can get you one here. I don't know. So there are other examples of... here's a Phyrexian dragon. Dragon engines. I'm just going to send you the card art, or the card itself, but... Yeah, they're just dragons. They're Phyrexians.
As far as a lot of the kind of insane Phyrexian art, they seem kind of... They look like regular dragons. Yeah, like they're very... Dragons, yeah. Like they're much just, less fleshy.
They're metal dragons. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they're as intelligent and powerful as their organic counterparts, making them nasty customers. And their remains can be found all over Dominaria, lingering bodies from the first invasion. So like it's not uncommon, or it's probably not common, but like finding dinosaur bones, you could find, you know, the bones of these dragon engines from the first.
All over
the plain. So this dragon engine erupted from the earth in the middle of the forest, sent ancient trees tumbling right in the midst of the Yavimayan village. As I said, the village had been built upon the ruins of Krug, which was an ancient Thran city. Elven archers and spellcasters form ranks while Jota kind of summons his magic. He starts summoning a shield to protect them all, basically. Amidst the turmoil, as these ancient roots are pulled from the ground, Maria notices an artifact littered amidst just like a plethora of old Thran artifacts, which just kind of got uprooted whenever this thing burst out of the ground. She sees one. She's like, oh, that's how we beat this thing, essentially. And Jota's like, I don't know what you're pointing at.
Like swords, gems, and orbs, and there's a big fucking on-off switch just like tumbles over like all the gold. Like, that's exactly. The one.
It's one of those like electric fly swatters. It's like just big enough for the dragon. So Jota doesn't recognize which artifact she's pointing at. He's also pretty focused on casting the shield spell. There's a Phyrexian dragon on the loose. It's all pretty crazy. And it turns out there's not just a Phyrexian dragon on the loose. So the quote continues, the dragon engine craned its head as if to look at their armed forces. Within its skull, its driver sat like a jewel, illuminated with a pale blue light. Even from this distance, Jota could make out her features, see the red light of her replaced eye. She matched Karn's descriptions. Rona. Her teeth were bared in a fierce smile.
That's the one that Karn crushed, right?
Yeah, the one that he was fighting, and then she collapsed the mountain.
Yeah,
okay. Right.
In an echo of Rona's own body language, the dragon engine opened, exposing its barbed jaws. Within its mechanized armor plates, the remains of small, rotting forest creatures hung suspended between oily ligaments. Rona had butchered them to restore the dragon engine's bulk. Jota's stomach. So I did just repost her picture for you guys, because she's very cool looking. But yeah, she has the one robotic eye, which she ripped out of her own head after Karn had crushed it. And was also like cutting into her leg to like replace parts as they were monologuing to each other, basically. And that's in the first episode that we recorded on Dominaria Unite. So she's figured out how to pilot a dragon engine after restoring it to life. Is life fair to say? I don't know.
Are the Phyrexians alive?
I think so. Yeah. I don't know if this one is, because it's just being piloted by her.
Right
now, like, it's specifically, it's like a more of a, like, it's a Zoid, right?
Oh no, yeah, here it is, you got it.
What's your Zoid look? This is all you get.
Zoid, what you get?
That'd be pretty funny to hide it in a part three of a magic episode.
she's figuring out how to pilot it, or she's figured out how to pilot it. She is piloting it, and she's just unleashing its like breath attack on the elves. Jota has his shield spell up, but he knows he won't be able to hold off the creature for long. It's big, it's powerful, and his energy is kind of like waning already. Maria convinces him to leave the shield with her soldiers. She's like, you keep the shield on them, come with me, we're gonna go after the artifact. So he's like, okay, sure. They find it, they dive down. Turns out she has like an Avatar the Last Airbender like glider that like pops out from a staff that she had. It's a silver. So it's a silver globe. I wrote it's a silver glover, which is fun.
Glover part two. Let's go.
Let's go. It's a silver.
Yeah, like just the white Mickey Mouse gloves. She like jumps off the dragon.
Oh, now we're ready. It's just like one Mickey Mouse glove sticking out of the earth. She pulls it up, and it's Mickey Mouse that she pulls out. So it's a silver globe covered in delicate golden Thran traceries. Maria beckons Jota to open a portal, and he does so kind of with like the last of his energy. He can't take them very far away, so he just kind of like teleports them like, I don't know, maybe 100 feet. Narrowly,
that's
managing
not that far at all. Like, you can still see what's happening. Like,
they see everything that happens like through this. Basically, he's pretty gassed after like deflecting the blows of the creature. He gets them just a short distance away as she activates the device. So.
I don't interrupt too much here, but it's just like, all right. Well, I'm running out of power. All right, I'm going to get us out of here. And like the teleportation, it's like sliding furniture, basically like the dome that he's protected them. Just like,
yeah,
just like through the earth.
Yeah. Yeah, they just like, they just teleport, and he just teleports to the outside of his shield spell, just like on the outside, like, oh, wait, let me in. I'm just like banging on his own shield spell.
He's like pointing down at the ground inside, just like,
roll it down.
Yeah, like magic keys on the ground. He's
the quote continues. Maria dove through, and Joda leapt after her. He spun, held out his hand, and clenched it into a fist. The portal collapsed, just in time. The Thran artifact flashed, a bright red light that saturated the landscape as if in warning, and then instead of a boom, there was silence. Between the Yavimayan elves and the dragon engine, a thin film seemed to have formed. But it wasn't a film, not really. On the side on which Joda stood, the air was thick with cloudy pollen, dust the dragon engine had kicked up, and humidity. He'd never realized that air had a color, not until he looked from an area with air to an area without it. The Thran weapon had created a spherical vacuum. The dragon engine stood in the center of it and roared in absolute silence. But even from here, Joda could see how the dragon engine failed. The organic pieces inside it died. The mangled remains of the woodland creatures, confronted with vacuum, froze. Inside the dragon engine, tendons snapped, organs turned to slimy ice or burst, and muscle fibers solidified. The dragon's wires, writhing beneath its armor, seemed to have become more brittle. More than a few snapped off. The lights faded from the dragon engine, dimming inside its... So they got a bring your own vacuum chamber.
That's cool.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, one of his arms floats too close to the International Space Station, and they just put it on the outside of it. It's like a new, new feature. Yeah.
You got the Canadian arm that's got like that sterile NASA white, and you've got like the twisted dragon arm that's also there just to like...
Exactly.
So Rhoda manages to escape from the dragon engine and the vacuum. It seems like it's not like the film layer at the edge of it. Doesn't seem to be anything. I guess just caught by surprise, and this happened pretty fast. All the muscles bursting and everything. I don't know if her muscles burst or froze or anything.
I think she's probably seen Titan AE, and the only scene I remember from that movie is when they have to kick out the window of the spaceship. The guy telling the main character, you have to exhale before we go into space. So she probably...
Your lungs will turn inside out.
Yeah.
I mean, you're still fucked, right? Like, the pressure...
Just into space, you're pretty fucked, dude.
Yeah. If you're raw dog in space, man.
I would need them to use the Phyrexian arm to grab me and put me back towards the door. Right.
I know in space, or in a vacuum for that matter, you wouldn't freeze because heat loss, cold is heat transfer. So it needs to transfer to something. Right? So just because
it boils your blood.
That would be a pressure thing, anything.
Okay, yeah.
But there would be no heat loss because there's nothing for the heat to go to. There's no air for when you get cold with the wind. It's because the wind is coming and your body is like losing heat to the wind.
Right,
there's nothing for your body to lose heat to. So you would just that's the one thing that I'm pretty.
But the pressure difference would fuck us too badly. I think we don't exist that way, man.
I go to the gym. I think I could survive. I don't know.
I know. Right. I know. Like NASA's astronaut outfits are very expensive, like upwards of $1 million each, right? So like there's a lot of pieces in there to keep people alive, right?
One of those pieces is a diaper.
Yeah, for sure.
When you're out there spacewalking, they do it sometimes for like hours. I've heard like 8 hours, 12 hours outside, and you're just working on something, man.
Yeah.
You do your shit too.
Yeah. I mean, it's a big process to like get into it and get out of it and go in and out. And I'm sure there's like a million checks and like everything that you have to do.
Do you bill NASA for putting the suit on, or does the shift start when you spacewalk?
Yeah, I don't know. You got to consult your crystal orb to see if you're salaried, if you're contracted. I'm on call with NASA. Oh fuck! I gotta go to the space station this weekend.
I gotta do my 480 hours on the Phyrexian arm.
Yeah, goddamn refrigerator broke. The Phyrexian arm's not working. Can't fix it.
It's just like the end of the arm, like on the outside of the space station.
You gotta exercise a lot up there. I heard the sweat starts to form in like globules, and it'll just kind of be like attached to your face, kind of thing, like a big old.
You could dab them off with like a plantation owner thing who's with the consumption, right?
I'm pretty sure the suits are like climate controlled, right? For that reason.
Yeah.
So
yeah, a little plastic dollar store fan right in front of your face.
Just a fan in a spacesuit.
Yeah, with one of those like crack like mitten warmers underneath the fan, just blowing into your face. Like, perfect.
All right, final checks complete. We are ready to open the airlock. Jimmy, did you install a fan in the center of your spacesuit?
No, I did not.
Don't worry, I'll exhale before we go outside.
So Rona manages to escape the dragon engine in this vacuum. She's like gets outside the bubble essentially. She's gasping for breath as Maria regards the wreckage of the forest. She realizes not just uprooted trees, but Magnagoths, which are tree folk. So like a lot of these uprooted trees are these tree folk lay scattered on the
sentient forest,
floor.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So she says, hundreds of years of life lost in an instant. Joda inclined his head. That's war. They will find us, won't they? Maria said, wherever my people go. Joda nodded. Maria's eyes shone with both anger and grief. There's only one path for us, and it doesn't lie in Yavimaya.
Oh, now I'll never find a big titty Magnagoth girlfriend.
they killed all the goth dommy mommies in Yavimaya. They said, we're going to war. So yeah, after the break, we'll set up some defenses.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back from the break. We were talking about Joda and his search for Yavimayan Elfussy. But now we're going to jump over to Karn and Teferi, whom after the group had split up, they had agreed to go to the Mana Rig to Joyra's workshop. Joyra, you guys will remember, was Karn's friend from childhood and from Shul.
From Wizard School.
Yeah, to begin preparing the defenses from the Tolarian Academy.
I would love for like Karn on his way to like meet Joyra, like it's stuck at a toll booth and just like, oh god, I can't believe this is now. I hope things are going better for Joda, who is like currently in a forest war.
So Karn, you guys will remember, had found at the very beginning of the first episode, I don't even remember if I talked about it honestly, but he had found a clay tablet which he believed had instructions on how to operate the Silex. So he had the Silex, the Golgothian Silex from ancient times, which was what in the Brothers War Mishra had detonated to like lay waste to the nuke, essentially. Mishra had used to lay waste to like huge swaths of land. So Karn has that. He thinks he wants to take it to New Phyrexia, detonate it there, and destroy all the Phyrexians. That's like his plan. So he had found a clay tablet when he was poking around in the caves of Koilos. And now he's like, he has it committed to memory. He doesn't have the tablet on him, but he's like, he remembers it perfectly because he's a computer. So he's committing himself to trying to decipher it. He's like, I'm going to study this thing that I remember in Joyra's room. So don't bug me. Okay.
Thank God we have like the guy, the main dude on the mission here has the gist of what to do. I'm glad.
Exactly.
So you open the door and Karen's got like one arm on the wall and the tablet underneath him. Like from, you just see him from his back. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
what do you do with it? Nothing.
Yeah. I do want to stress. So Joyra is not home and he is just hanging out in Joyra's room. There is like one part, like at the beginning of this section where it's like, he lays down on her bed exhausted.
I'm sure she wouldn't mind. I've been golem buried alive for a bit.
A 2-ton golem, yeah. 2-ton, 8-foot tall golem.
Golem in my bed, yeah. Golems don't even use bed frames, I bet.
Oh yeah, mattress on the floor.
Yep. That's what I got.
So he's committing himself to try to decipher the memory of the clay tablet, while Teferi is going to recruit more allies to help in the fight. So first, Teferi goes to see a little someone named Remy Derigaz, also known simply as Derigaz, sometimes, whose name means conception, and is the firstborn of the primeval dragons of Dominaria.
I really expected to see something that wasn't a picture of a tiny elephant standing on top of what, bowling pins? Like a newspaper ad from 1910?
Yeah, like beer bottles or something? I don't know. Jamie asked me what a dog and pony show was, so I...
Oh, well, when I went to the washroom. Excuse me, I thought this was relevant.
No, we haven't talked about it. Now you're talking about it, but that's just... Pete's leaking the DMs.
Dog and pony show is like when someone's making a big show trying to sell you something. So
Next time
someone comes to your door and trying to sell you something, you say, enough of the dog and pony show.
Yeah. Yeah, it's before the snake oil guy shows up.
And he'll be like, what does that mean? And you'll be like, wait, let me add you to this Discord server.
Yeah.
It's linked below, sir.
You probably want to listen to episodes 1 and 2 before you join the Discord server. So Remy Derigaz, the firstborn of the primeval dragons of Dominaria. The primeval dragons are only younger than the elder dragons. Elder is older than primeval. I thought that was backwards, but... So yeah, like basically the second generation. He's a second gen dragon. Darigaz's current incarnation, as he has been reincarnated a few times, is described as a massive, somewhat humanoid dragon. He's broad-shouldered with muscular arms that end in hand-like claws. I did post a picture for you guys. His dark umber-colored skin is more leathery than scaly, and features striations on his tail. His lizard-like face features horns like a ram's, and he breathes a white-hot flame that can vaporize enemies, earning him the nickname the Igniter.
Not the Vaporizer?
Yeah, this guy's the king of Vape Niche. No, he doesn't believe in vaping. Vaping's not cool.
And how's he related to Conception?
He's named Conception. His name, Darigaz, or Remy Derigaz, means Conception. The five primeval dragons, which were born of the elder dragons, were each named for the different phases in a dragon's life. So he's the first, he was conception. The last one's named death. The second is childhood, youth, then adulthood, or adult. And these are just translations from the draconic language that they speak, presumably. So
there's no puberty dragon with acne and braces and like a, and like a crustache that it that refuses to shave.
I'm totally gonna vaporize you guys.
That for sure exists in Spyro. One of the eggs you open and it's like Ned, and he's got his little mustache on his head, eyeglasses or something. There's so many nerdy dragons in that.
I had a crustache for a while. I'm willing to admit that.
I still do.
16 years later.
I've had one for 7 years now.
I mean, you can see it on camera. It's not a crustache. Come on. It's better than that. A little. You're just blonde.
Yeah, very, very blonde. I get it all the time where, like, I've had, like I remember a university class where I had this, like, really weird professor who was, he was a very nice guy, but he was, like, a business owner, and it was an entry-level, like, business school class. So I guess he just, like, taught this one class as, like, a fun side project for himself. To collect a little paycheck, but he came up to me. He's like, "So do you have a mustache?" I'm like, sitting in the first row. I'm like, "Yeah, I guess." Like, I don't know. Like, why you got to bring so much attention to this thing, man? but it's there. And it's fine. I'm not a lizard. I got that going for me.
Yeah.
So Teferi had reached out to this lizard, Remy Derigaz, old Ignitey, to try and enlist the help of Dominaria's dragons in the fight against the Phyrexians, only to be told they're deliberating. He's like, we haven't made up our mind, basically, if we're gonna help. So he's like, okay, well, fine. I'll go talk to the Gitu, who are humans native to Shiv, where the Mana Rig is located, the continent of Shiv. But they tell him, well, we're not going to decide until the dragons make a decision, because we want to be on whatever side the dragons are on. So if they're not fighting with you guys, we want to go fight with those.
We got all these wizards working the rigs, and they're going to side with the dragons either way. And this town runs on rigs, man. we got to get the dragons by it.
It's the food chain, baby. Mana rig eats magic. Dragons eat rigs. It's all part of the chain. You get the delicate ecosystem. So Teferi says, okay, I'll go talk to Vyashino. Lizard folk is once again told, they're not going to align themselves until the dragons do first. So everybody that he's going to see is like, what are the dragons doing? He's like, well, they're still deciding. They go, well, we'll wait for the dragons to make up their mind.
I trust them.
Yeah. He didn't come up completely empty-handed, though. So he does get one faction to join his cause. The goblins of Shiv had come forward to offer their help.
I can't wait. A bunch of people wearing like upside down potato bags as clothes with like pointed sticks are like, we don't need to wait for the dragons. You're like, come on.
Straight up. It did say in the story, like, they specifically chose to help because they were confident that the dragons would come around, and then the humans and the lizard folk would come around once the dragons did. So the goblins straight up are like, well, politically in the future, we want to be able to say we were the first ones to join the coalition, because it's going to be like a big political move for us to say that. So it's just like just goblin scheming still.
Yeah, all these goblins scheming to be on the right side of history.
Yeah, exactly. So they're not the mightiest fighters. They're tenacious. They're high in number. And their kind did help to use the mana rig in the ancient past to produce the metal, which would become the Weatherlight all those years ago. So they're at least culturally, I guess, familiar with the mana rig. I don't think goblins are that long lived, if there's any still around, except for maybe some very powerful wizards or something like that.
What are they, like hamsters? It's just like, oh, yeah. Yeah, it's like I'm an adult goblin. He's like, he's 8 months old. Like, oh my god, yeah, yeah. He looks great.
Just haggard.
You gotta get two goblins if you're gonna have one, because then they get depressed if they're alone.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah, that's it. If you put a goblin in a cage with nothing to do and a clean water bottle and then a water bottle full of cocaine water, he'll always go for the cocaine water. But if you put him in like a goblin paradise with a bunch of other goblins and a bunch of goblin playthings, like, you know,
then
rusty,
he does cocaine and he plays and goblins. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Then he'll still do cocaine because he's goblin.
Goblins love cocaine. Is really all this experiment taught us.
It's why. I'm going to go out on a limb here. I don't know anybody who works on an oil rig. I bet you it's pretty popular with oil rig workers too.
Oh yeah, no, that's a big thing in Alberta. All of our hometown friends who went out west definitely. Spent a lot of money on things out there. Yeah.
Navy guys too. The guys I know in the Navy are big white girl fans.
One of the guys that Ethan said, or that Peter said earlier, oh, that's a great actor's name. I know he's been out on the rig getting wild himself.
That man, Idris Elba.
Yes.
So Karn and Teferi are kind of discussing their options, you know, lets them know, hey, we got coked up goblins to help us out, but none of the other ones. We're not sure if the dragons are going to come help us.
Yeah, actually, that is straight up coke move. It's just like, no, I trust the dragons. They'll come around. Don't worry.
Exactly. So
Karn, whole time, like,
yeah, exactly. Well, they have so many like short, sharp little pieces of metal to use as like a one of the spoons, right? That you use for cocaine.
Yeah, or like cut up a line. They've got a bunch of mirrors too.
Yeah, a bunch of little cutting up their lines with like rusty machetes, like. Karn still hasn't made any progress on the tablet or deciphering the Silex, so he literally just kind of like sat around and thought for while Teferi was doing all this work.
Yeah, he's in his friend's bed trying to read notes he wrote on a napkin for a thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah, don't read clay tablets in the bed. It gets crumbs everywhere.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, he's a very,
his chest.
Very powerful golem, right? So like, instead of like crumpling up the piece of paper at the end, he just like crumbles the stone tablet.
I'd let her read in bed.
I wouldn't kick her out of bed for reading clay tablets. I'll
exactly. That's it. There you go.
So Karn and Teferi, they're discussing their options, what to do, the newfound allies that they've acquired, the goblins. And there is a deafening screech followed by an impact which shakes Jor's workshop and the entirety of the mana rig. Karn and Teferi rush outside to see what on the roof could cause such a clatter. I have another quote for you guys. In Shiv's skies, so hot they were not blue but a seared white, the Weatherlight wheeled through the sky, draped in the rotting detritus it had been using as camouflage from Phyrexians hunting them. It seemed they hadn't been able to elude one, though, which circled them like a predator. Unfurled, the Phyrexian dominated the sky. Its thin, bat-like wings had clawed metal tines with too many joints, and its body was a mass of fibers. The Weatherlight fought it, firing harpoons into the beast, but the barbs fell through the loose mesh of fibers, useless. Magic blinked across the sky, but even Karn could see that this creature effortlessly outmatched the Weatherlight. But then a small shadow in Shiv's white sky grew closer, spreading two massive wings, a dragon. Even Karn had to appreciate a full-grown dragon. no mightier being existed on Dominaria, the apex of both violence and wisdom. The shadow brightened, glinting as the sun struck its scales. Darigaz had come to their aid. He turned down, diving and gained speed until he struck the monstrosity. The Phyrexian exploded at the impact, parted into a writhing mass. Still airborne, its fragmented body draped between its wings. The monstrosity attempted to draw itself together. Slick iron fibers wove and interlocked, but Darigaz had already pivoted midair. He exhaled a flame so white-hot over the Phyrexian monstrosity that it did not burn. It vaped. Molten metal droplets rained onto the mana rig's deck, followed by Darigaz himself. People scattered, retreating to a respectful distance. Planeswalker Teferi, Darigaz bowed his head. I accept your proposal to fight here at Shiv. I will defend our skies. No doubt, my brethren will join me, as will those from the other nations who have seats on the Shivan Council. So, they got the dragons. It did take long. They're just like, oh, dragons are still deliberating. And then one attack, and they're like, okay, we'll help.
Okay. I mean, it's a really good incentive.
So yeah, with the dragons in line, the Getsu and the Vyashino would shortly follow. The goblins are dishing out a told you so's like nobody's business.
just like forehead and pointed ears resulted visible at like the deliberating table, just like
ah! Yeah.
Yeah, so you can't see their grinding teeth beneath the table.
Yeah, exactly.
They gotta get on each other's shoulders to do a line off the coffee table. So it looks like their little coalition is shaping up nicely, right? Things are going great for Karna Teferi. Honestly, Jota too. They fought off the dragon engine. Things are going pretty chill there. Across the great ocean from Shiv, on the continent of Erona, Jaya and Ajani weren't exactly feeling the brotherly love so much. As we said, a Phyrexian dreadnought, large enough to blot out the sky, was towering above them after having burst out from beneath a mountain, right? Not good things. Danitha Capassion, leader of the Capassion Knights, had just killed her own father, who was being puppeted by the Phyrexian mage Airtai. I realize I never gave you guys a picture of Airtai post-Phyrexian Phyrexianation. So I sent him to you there.
It looks way more normal than I would imagine a man taken over by the glistening oil. Gonna be real.
So this guy is not taken over by the glistening oil. This guy was in the first Phyrexian invasion, was like joined their side essentially, like of his own free will. You might remember from the last episode. So he's more like using their science and technology, but is not corrupted by glistening oil.
He looks very cool, like way less twisted and mutated. And he's got like porcupine quill. He's got like a fade, right? He's a blonde dude with the fade shaved in, or the pixie cut, I guess, if it was on a woman.
He's got bleeding eyes.
He is weeping blood, but also he has like porcupine quills coming out of the sides of the fade, which I think is very cool. And then the forearms, I suppose, would be way more important than the do he's rocking.
When are you guys going to mention that he not has the space between your hands and elbows? He has four arms, the limbs, like four of them.
He's got one giant bicep with like two forearms. Jutting out of each bicep.
No, it's not. It's separate. I zoomed in. It's not one big bicep, is it? Oh, it kind of is.
Big bicep.
I think it's supposed to be merged. I think that's just like a shadowed line that you're seeing.
It looked like he was like skin welded. Okay, hold your elbows together, and then they just like sprayed on some skin there, like also, in the Matrix when Keanu's mouth glue. Is shut. Yeah,
yeah. He's got regular hands on the bottom arms, and his top hands are like Spock hands. He's got
three fingers.
He's got two fingers and a thumb. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
I didn't notice it at first. I noticed his hair. I was just like, damn. I like you cut, G, and then whack him on the porcupine quills.
He's just how many for abs? Listeners to comment on his own haircut. So he's like, oh, look at this guy's haircut, huh?
Yeah.
He's got, like, his armor has, like, a 12-pack of abs, which is pretty damn cool, too.
Yeah.
I wonder if he just has, like,
what's great about armor with a 12-pack is you don't even have to work for it. You just look like you got it. It's really
cool. Think that thing opens up, like, a window shutter, and, like, his beer gut just spills out at the end of the day.
Thank God! Yeah, finally.
Yeah, a big meal. It's like he's got the little like the string when you open your blinds. He's got one of those strings.
Thinking of also like a retail store gate is what it sounds like
the security gate. Yeah,
but it's like your blinds. Like whenever you want them to come back down, but if it's like one side's a little lower than the other.
Yeah,
fucking that.
So it's this guy, Beer Gut Tucked Away, who had summoned the Phyrexian Dreadnought, who had experimented on Aaron Capuchin. You guys might remember, like, Aaron Capuchin still seemed to have some of his faculties whenever he was killed by his daughter. My canon is that because this guy worked on Aaron Capuchin, and Aaron Capuchin wasn't corrupted by the glistening oil. So he wasn't, like, a true Phyrexian. Yeah, yeah. He was just a Phyrexian experiment, basically, like this guy is. So the Llanowar elves and the Benelish fighters had exhausted themselves fighting wave after wave of Phyrexian, and the two planeswalkers helping them were likewise running out of energy. I have another quote for you guys here. Airtai laughed softly. He lifted his arm. The Epperset had only three stubby fingers on each hand, which he beckoned with. The dreadnought swung its tail around and crushed Phyrexians and Benelish knights alike as it spewed venom. The viscous fluid arced out, so acidic it melted trees and boiled the alpine creek. The blow echoed throughout the mountain range, triggering distant rockfalls and avalanches. Despite the cacophony of tumbling rock, Jaya could still hear Airtai's delighted laughter. He waved his arms, and the Phyrexians launched themselves into the devastated Benelish forces. Ajani fought at Jaya's back, hacking away at the creatures that skittered toward her. Danitha retreated to aid her troops. She shouted orders that caused the Benelish knights to reform around the Llanowar archers, circling up now that they were surrounded. Fire, she called, and the Llanowar elves released their bowstrings. Their arrows rebounded off the dreadnought's legs, not even denting its armor. The dreadnought stretched and straddled the battlefield. It arched its spine. If it released more acid, they'd surely be doomed. They weren't doomed, though. They were okay. Because who...
Great.
Who would save them momentarily, but Airtai himself? He bade the Phyrexians stop, and the Phyrexians listened, scurrying away from the turtling defenders, even as they continued to pepper the Phyrexians, the retreating Phyrexians. Airtai told Danitha, leader of the Benelish Knights, to call off her fighters, lest the dreadnought release another wave of acid over them all. And she realizes pretty quickly, she doesn't really have a choice in the matter. If he's offering peace, she's going to take it, basically.
Belgium, the Netherlands, and Lichtenberg have agreed to...
to Germany's demands.
Yeah.
The knights stop fighting. Jaya's flames flicker out. And with it, this kind of like wave of fatigue washes over her after all the fighting she's done. The fighting had stopped, but neither Jaya nor Ajani had a plan to really get them out of there. She's like, cool, we have a reprieve, we're talking, which is a step in the right direction, but what does this guy want? They're at his
Can
mercy.
Not there. Planeswalk out of Dominaria? Was that one of the rules?
Well, they could, but they'd just be leaving all these people to die. They don't want to do... ultimately, they don't want to. They can't get everybody out of here, is basically what it is.
Yeah. This story doesn't... It was like, we tried.
They could presumably save themselves. Presumably, like, if I was writing for Magic, how the story would go is they would planeswalk away, but because they were so tired, they would leave Dominaria for a long time too. So they're probably also leaving Dominaria to like its fate with the Phyrexians, which they probably also don't want to do.
Yeah.
Just because like it can take a lot of energy, especially when you're doing it with like little energy. I feel like it's something they've established enough lore at this point to support
the,
that.
Phyrexians are like, they take the living things they leave behind and add to their army, right? So like, even if they didn't care about a single person in Dominaria, if they want to stop Phyrexians, it's sooner is always better than later.
Exactly. Yeah. You're just giving them more forces at this point.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So they're at Airtai's mercy, and he'd simply melt the defenders if Ajani and Jaya didn't do as he commanded. So they're in a pickle, right? It's a real pickle. They know that Tamiyo was complicated, right? Teferi had told them that a planeswalker had been complicated.
Yeah.
So they know that the same could be done to them if they're captured by the Phyrexians, alive or dead. They know that it's a possibility, right?
And even though they complicated the rabbit lady, whose name I've forgotten.
I just said it.
Oh, I'm sorry. their flesh still can't planeswalk properly, right? So they still need to be rebuilt?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Well, like, yeah, so they can get planeswalkers to open the way for them, essentially.
But they were building Shieldred underground, which is what kicked off this whole thing.
Yeah, because the metallic parts are able to planeswalk through the Blind Eternities.
Yeah.
If somebody else opens the gate, Pezzeret was the one we learned who opened the gate for Urabrask, Shieldred, and Jyngataxus, I believe. Or no, Vorinclex, not Urabrask, sorry.
Wait, so the metal goes, but the flesh doesn't? I thought it was the other way around.
No, sorry, the metal goes through, but the flesh all burns away in the Blind Eternities. So when they're just the metal, and they have to rebuild it by adding organic material to the metal pieces, essentially.
Okay.
Yeah, the lady with the cyborg eye was helping rebuild Shieldred when Karn founder in the first episode we did about this.
Yeah. Non-planeswalkers generally, like organic material generally, if you're not a planeswalker, can't travel. That's why Jaya and Ajani can't take like all these fighters with them through the blind of journeys, because they'd just be melted by the blind of journeys.
It would just be their clothes. Just like, we made it. And then, like,
So Phyrexian airport, or like a Phyrexian like place where you're going before you take off, when you go through the scanners, it's scanning you for flesh, and it's like, not too much flesh, back the line, buddy.
Yeah. Sorry, sir. Like, come to the side here. Put your shoes on.
Put your shoes on. Take your feet off.
Yeah. There's no bomb in this luggage. So, like, you're gonna need to take this with you.
Yeah, exactly. So Jaya tries to stall, just being like, well, we don't want to be captured. We got to think of something to buy yourself enough time and energy to, I don't know, conjure a fireball inside Airtai's skull, whatever it takes, right? When something, I think you could say, peculiar happened.
Uh-oh.
A sweet breeze cleared the battlefield stink. It brought with it the clean scent of leather and oil. The horizon began to brighten, the western horizon, with the sheen of gold.
Finally, the haberdasher has arrived.
The air gained a peculiar, unearthly quality to it, as if the particles hummed with ancient tension. An immense but sleek golden ship tore through the mountain's rubble, rocks kicking up in the wake behind it. The shimmering vessel swooped in a circle around the Phyrexian dreadnought. Hundreds of Keldon warriors leapt from the ship, landing on the dreadnought's wide, scaly back, and they drove their blades and cleated boots into the creature's hide to secure themselves. A flying golden ship shows up out of and a bunch of Vikings jump off it and onto the dreadnought to fight them.
This is some like first year Lord of the Rings shit. This is rad.
Right? Yeah. It's like when Stormy and Gensler show up again and they're all just like covered in bronze now.
Exactly. Yeah. Fired by Ototaril. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this flying golden ship is known as the Golden Argosy. Very much a play on the Argonauts, the Argonaut, I think. Or the Argos, I guess, is the ship.
Yeah, named after the Toronto football team.
The Argonauts were the men on it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The ship is the Argo. It's just Argo. Yeah.
So the Golden Argosy was once a piece of Keldon myth. The Keldon are of Keld. They're Dominaria's Viking stand-ins. I feel like we talked about them a bit during the Mirari episodes, but I do not fucking remember.
Yeah. Sorry, I got stuck on the Argo thing. What if, like, Fargo was just William H. Macy with the Argonauts?
Oh, geez, nice fleece you got there, Jason, huh? Oh, boy, what happened to Hercules? He just jumped off to go choke Poseidon? Jeez. Oh, let me tell you.
That boy sure does love wrestling.
Yeah. I would watch the fuck out of that.
Absolutely.
It'd just be like, oh, you know, that the monster on that island, he's just kind of funny looking. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He only had one eye.
A Minotaur.
Fargonaut.
Jason and the Fargonauts, Coen Brothers, crunch at us.
So the Golden Argosy was originally not a myth, but it was like this legendary ship. It was built on top of this holy site of Keld called the Keldon Necropolis. It was prophesied, that this ship would fly forth from the Keldon Necropolis to bring the mightiest Keldon warriors to an eternal battle known as the Keldon Twilight.
Is this like a Valhalla battleship that returns to the world of the living?
Yeah, exactly. So
that rocks. Holy shit.
They're very Viking, and it's this ship would shepherd the mightiest warriors to this eternal battle known as the Keldon Twilight, where fallen warriors would be resurrected by the Keldon gods forever to serve in this battle. It's an eternal battle, and they would just keep fighting and dying and getting resurrected and fighting and dying and getting resurrected.
So it's like the perfect counter to the Phyrexians that keep rebuilding and completing the dead, right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And
every Call of Duty deathmatch lover, it's their dream. It's infinite respawns, dude, and you're just going in and you're fighting for the rest of your life, man.
FaZe Clan has come. We've been saved.
Dude, this guy won't get off the ship with the noob tube, man. He just
he's just camping the Golden Argosy.
Yeah, it's William H. Macy. Oh, sheesh, I thought it was an okay move.
I can fuck with Midwestern FaZe Clan, dude. All right.
So this is not the first time that Dominaria has seen the Golden Argosy. Many Kaladins saw the coming of the first Phyrexian invasion as the twilight, that eternal battle. And they eagerly took up arms to face off against the Phyrexians the first time. They met the Phyrexians on a frozen lake, and a battle was fiercely fought. Much to their dismay, however, to your point, Peter, about how this would be perfect to deal with the Phyrexians, the fallen Kaladin warriors were not resurrected by their gods, but instead they were reanimated by the Phyrexians to fight against their clansmen.
Okay.
The classic, I was reading the prophecy upside down state,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, okay. Oh no, it didn't say the ghosts shall defeat the fucking Phyrexians. Yeah, they can complicate spirits? That's crazy.
No, it's like the bodies would die fighting the Phyrexians, and then they, like, on the battlefield, they were reanimating the bodies to fight for them, right?
I'd imagine these dudes is showing up as dead warrior spirits return to the world of the living to fight the Phyrexians.
They thought that the Kaladin Twilight, the final battle, was coming, so they were, like, right, eagerly kind of, like, going to battle to die a worthy death, prove their worth, And then in this one battle against the Phyrexians on this frozen lake, like the first major engagement, they realized, like, oh, we're not getting resurrected to fight the Phyrexians eternally. We're getting resurrected by the Phyrexians to fight ourselves.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Which is blasphemy.
Do they get a new body every time? Like, is it an infinite? No, it's like soldier maker.
Add metal, right? Probably the Phyrexians. They probably have, like, I don't know. Big tub of mercury. Tentacles.
I thought it's like whenever you're playing like a multiplayer game, you die, you leave your body behind, and you come back, right, with your new body, and then just making more and more. Because how do you, like, fight against yourself if not with a new body, right?
That'd be an interesting respawn mechanic in an actual video game. But with the Phyrexians, you're probably, like, your teeth fall out, your arm breaks open, and has a bunch of, like, pointy spines inside of it.
They need to despawn for everyone's computer to run well. We can't have the Phyrexians just pick up all the dead bodies, or else we're fucked.
You know? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Run a ramp.
Yeah.
So seeing the atrocity, a Kaladin leader shattered the ice of the frozen lake, plunging both sides into the icy water. The Golden Argosy left the Kaladin Necropolis for the first time thousands of years ago, and instead of shepherding the mightiest warriors to the Battle of Kaladin Twilight, rescued them from the freezing waters and certain deaths at the end of the Battle of Kaladin Twilight. So again, had it backwards. It's like, oh, the prophecy says it's going to take them there to fight and then die and get resurrected. But instead, they fought, died, got resurrected, and then it took them away.
Okay.
Essentially. So that first time, it took the survivors to Urborg for the final confrontation with Yawgmoth and the first gen of Phyrexians before disappearing again until now. It basically, the Golden Argosy hasn't been seen since that last time that it shepherded them in. Seems that Rada had found the legendary ship. Rada is the leader of the Kaladin warriors, and was using it to move her Kaladin fighters around the plane to fuck up Phyrexians.
And so, using it to ship sugar to Portugal. Like, it really, it was pointless.
So I posted a picture for you guys of Danitha and Rada of Rada is a planeswalker, I should mention, of the Kaladin warriors fighting back to back. And you guys can appreciate that while I read you a quote.
Okay.
Rada herself led her warriors onto the Phyrexian dreadnought's battering ram head. The Phyrexian monstrosity still on the ground seemed to realize that the dreadnought was vulnerable to this assault. Rather than sheltering against the dreadnought's legs, they too started to scale it to attack the Kaladins. Archers, cover us. Knights, after me. Danitha charged the dreadnought for Dominaria. The knights roared and followed, plowing into the Phyrexians that sought to defend the dreadnought. The dreadnought, beneath the Kaladin onslaught, released a moan that shook the entire landscape. Ajani bellowed, "Archers, to me, fire on the Phyrexians climbing the dreadnought." Jaya raised her hands. Her flame brightened with her renewed spirits, and she blasted the skittering creatures that had pivoted to attack the archers. Ajani pressed close to her, defending her from any Phyrexian that headed her way. Rada had pierced the dreadnought's eye, leaving a gash large enough for Rada to stand within the socket. Aqueous humor spurted, followed by the thicker, clear goop of vitreous gel. Rada hacked through the muscular iris. The dreadnought shrieked in agony, tossing its head to throw her off. Its lower jaw gaped. It dripped blood, black fluid, and pinkish organic matter from its mouth. Airtai bellowed, "Sheldred will hear of this." "I hope she does," Jaya called. The creature crumpled, one joint at a time relaxing into death. The Kaladins on its back let out a cheer and then flattened themselves, bracing to ride out its fall. The Benelish knights who'd been fighting the underneath the dreadnought scattered. Jaya and Ajani both stared up at the nearing bulk of the dreadnought's underbelly, how it blotted the sky. Jaya scrambled out from underneath the dreadnought, squeaking past its final crash into the earth. The sound resounded in the mountains. Then, after that, the roar of avalanches and tumbling stone, and then that, until that, too, trickled into silence. So they did it. They beat the dreadnought, guys. All good. Beat the dang big guy.
I don't want to bury the lead too much, because it's an episode I've always wanted to do. This really seems, at least the fragments that you've given us, seems like a reference directly to Ansalagon the Black, the largest dragon in Middle-earth, who was killed by a flying sailboat, and when he crashed into the ground, destroyed three mountains.
That's cool as hell.
Which is pretty cool. Because we're going to do a Middle-earth dragon episode one day, TM, is why. And I'm like, maybe we can be like, hey, this inspired the Phyrexian dreadnought fight.
Lore Boys Canon.
Yeah.
Langley Hyde. That's where she got her inspiration.
Do big dragon,
Peter. So with that, you know, the Keldons joined the coalition as well. We got one more group of allies, the Viking people. Back at the Mana Rig, Karn is reunited with his old friend Joyra, which is really, really good for him, right? He's like, I wasn't in your room.
eating clay tablets on the covers.
So they're just kind of catching up. When Karn gets a call from Joda, sounding a little upset. Joda's voice came through, clear as if he stood in the room alongside them. I'm headed towards Shiv with the Yavi Mayan elves. Maria was able to recruit several neighboring groups. Since we're traveling by tree folk, it will take some time to reach you. Karn, there's something you need to know. Yes, Karn asked. Joda hesitated. There's a spy in the new coalition.
Oh, no.
But more on that next time, I think. I do think there will be one more episode of Dominaria United. We're not gonna... I realized this when I was writing this episode. I was like, I don't know if I made it clear that the Phyrexian arc does not end at the end of Dominaria United. It's gonna be like Kamigawa, which like they're gonna defend Dominaria to some extent at least. But this is very much focused on the plane. There's like March of the Machines, which comes, you know, Phyrexian Invasion. There's like later sets, which focus much more on the invasion of the multiverse and then going to New Phyrexia and kind of stopping them there.
Okay, cool.
Which maybe we'll do someday, but hope you enjoyed that episode. Hope you're looking forward to the next one. I am looking forward to writing it and figuring out who this ding dang spy is, huh?
Yeah, man. Huh? I want to know.
I think it's you.
Me. I think I'm the spy.
I wasn't ready for this. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. If you enjoyed the show, consider leaving us a rating or review on the podcast app of choice or telling a friend about the show. It's the best way to help us grow. It's those two things, probably. I don't know. Pete, what's going on with Instagram?
At Lore Boys Podcast on Instagram, give us a follow, give us a little hello. I'm on vacation. I might not respond to you at time of recording, but I will get back to us. I always enjoy getting some DMs from the people. And yeah, other than that, I've been working on both the Lore Boys and my personal artwork, so I don't know, keep it tuned in.
Yeah, and Jimbo, what's up with you?
Come hang on the Discord. This is where people are chatting. It's where you find me a lot of the time. We had like someone I think this week named Jack White who just joined. They're like, I'm sitting in the parking lot and I've been listening to you guys forever, and I just like finally joined. It's like, yeah, welcome. And I bet you there's a lot. Well, I know there's a lot of other ones like that from the numbers that we have our downloads versus our Discord.
Yeah, we do talk about all the Discord people because it's great to put faces to all of you crazy listeners. But it is also really cool to think about how many people who do listen to the show who aren't in the Discord. So shout out to you guys whose names we couldn't possibly know.
Yep. You're out there.
Jack White's sister, the other White Stripes one.
Megan
White.
Megan White.
If you guys want to support the show, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/theloreboys, where we offer up a few things, loser titles, bonus audio. We make it easy for you to find all the episode art that I referenced in this episode. If you just Google MTG, the name of the character, like Multani, you'll get the art that we were looking at. It's really easy to find. But we do make it easy and compile it all on Discord for the patrons. So yep. patreon.com/theloreboys.
There's also like we do bonus audio too. So we got like a lot of them. I think we're getting close to 90, and they're like usually half an hour at least. So there's a bunch of those.
Full week work week of bonus audio up there already.
And you'll usually catch on to some of the reasons why we're joking about things before they like. We didn't quite catch the Gyat and Rizzler shit, but usually the stuff that happens before the episode and kind of works its way into the episode, you can kind of see where it came from.
Yeah.
And hear us talk about what games we're playing, personal life stories. Like, if you want to get to know us better, the premium episodes
For everyone who's requested Lore Boys Lore, it's the bonus audio on the Patreon.
And you got to piece it together yourself because it's all spread out in there, but it is Lore Boys Lore.
Yeah, exactly.
We leave crumbs. One thing I've wanted to explain recently, just as a refresher to people, is the loser titles that we refer to is that the subtitle name of every episode is some goofy bullshit that we generally write down over the course of the episode and release Monday. Generally, so that people in our private, Discord, like the patron Discord chats, get to guess what the episode is. It's a game created by the community. Seems to be a huge amount of fun. There's a scoreboard. So that's what the loser titles are. If you want to get in early and try and guess what the episode that week is going to be about before everyone else, seems to be quite the gas.
It's fun. You get to see all like the little insane things that we say that we write them down when something sounds insane, like. Jason and the Argussie, and then I just put Jason and the Argussie on Patreon, and you have to guess they're talking about Magic the Gathering Dominaria United.
Exactly.
From that, basically.
William H. Mussey.
Yeah.
I have Jason and the Fargonauts based on the same.
I wrote down just Fargo.
I had a middle one for you guys, so we're all writers here.
There you go. Yeah, so if you guys don't trust Patreon, we do, of course, have Lore Boys Prime. This week, we are recruiting people for our ship to row, essentially.
Yeah.
I am wearing my South American golden poncho, so I think I'm the leader of the ship by default. Call me Absolutely. Jason. They're just like the beginning of Moby Dick. Call me Jason.
Call me Jason.
So if you're interested in joining up with the Loreboynauts, make sure to send us a voice recording of your best Minnesotan accent so that we can send us a note somehow. I don't know. There's a way to do this, I think. You can contact us, loreboyspodcast@gmail.com. And only the best Minnesotans will be chosen for... or North Dakotans. I think it's Fargo, North Dakota, right? North Dakota.
Fargo's in North Dakota, yeah.
Will be chosen for our ship.
But the show is set, or the movie is set in Minnesota, as far as
yeah.
I know. Is it? I think it's set in Fargo, North Dakota, dude.
Minnesota. Not to distract too much.
No, He goes to Fargo.
Who does? Yeah. William H. Macy?
William H. Jason to get the Golden Fleece in Minnesota, for Christ's sake.
It's all coming apart. Damn it.
Minneapolis and Brainerd, apparently.
I took a picture of Pete with his cat behind him, and I posted it in our boys' chat. Like, how funny this! I got a funny picture of Pete.
Oh my god.
That is a good one.
I do look horrible.
Cranking it out and just ignoring the cat. Exactly. Also be in the episode picks on Discord if you're interested in joining the Patreon. So crunch at us and Lore Boys out. Bye, Jamie.
Okay, dude.
Have to AFK for 2 seconds. There's something going on.
Oh, he's got a rat on the couch. This is exciting. What's he doing? He's walking over the couch. His dog and his cat are both on the couch, very intent on it. Checking it out. He pulled it open.
Oh, Jesus. The dog went for it instead of the cat. Holy shit.
Did you get it?
Oh.
Did you get it? Oh, no, it's gone. Yeah, wow, this is exciting. That dog, as you guys heard on on the podcast, on the episode, did kick his djembe as it dove for the rat.
Is that what that noise was?
I don't know where it went.
Well, it was exciting at the very least.
The rat killing is going to be a good cold open for the episode.
Sorry. Sorry about that.
That was good. We're trying our best to give you a bit of play-by-play.
that was scary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.